Tomorrow Built Today listeners. This is one of your co-hosts, Jana Messerschmidt. For those of you new to the podcast, we cover investing trends and predictions along with discussions about the latest news in consumer tech. This week, we're doing something a little bit different. We are bringing you three of the talks from Lightspeed's first negotiation summit with Hashtag Angels, Demystifying Power and Wealth in the Valley. It recently took place at Twitter. You'll hear from top negotiators, founders, and investors to hear the tips for negotiating in the Valley. One note to keep in mind is that because we recorded this live, which included a lot of hand gestures and animation from the speakers, the voice quality isn't perfect, but the content makes up for it.
Jana is the founder and CEO of Rich Talent Group, a boutique executive search firm here in San Francisco that a lot of you probably have heard of. For two decades, Jana has partnered with leading companies from Fortune 500 companies to help build teams of proven leaders and diverse thinkers. Her clients, you may have heard of some of them, Airbnb, Eventbrite, Peloton, Pinterest, Square, Uber. Who have you not worked with? So before you can negotiate the best offer, really you have to have a diverse network of people. So we're going to take a bit of a detour to talk about best practices of how to build your network, which is the first step before you can then get the job you want and negotiate the offer you want. So I'm going to dive right in. Jana, your reputation precedes you. You are known to be one of the most connected women I can think of in the Valley and in tech. How did you start building out your network? How do you think about network?
First of all, I just want to thank Meredith and Jana in particular, because you have brought together an incredible group of people in this room today, and I would love to know each and every one of you, so thank you for having me here.
Yeah, absolutely.
And second of all, to Maggie Neal, who was my business school professor, I would go to class with her any day, so it's wonderful to see her in action as well.
Yeah.
I think it's important just to note that I spent almost 18 years across two very big companies before I became a founder myself. And the reason I quickly just tell that story is I think you have to have something that really calls to you in terms of mission, purpose, calling, as opposed to I want to do what I was doing before. And for us, when we started, it's almost 5 years ago, so April will be 5 years, which is crazy. It was all around building diverse and inclusive teams. And that started with the team we built ourselves. All the people on our team represent different sort of stripes and flavors of diverse backgrounds. And the results speak for themselves, not just for us, but because of the partners that we've chosen. Because at the end of the day, we're recommending diverse slates of candidates, but it's ultimately the choice of the companies that we work with to make those ultimate hiring decisions. And last year, we just pulled our stats together, 78% of the people that we put into roles, and these are VP level on ups, these are very senior level roles, were women and or people of color. So it's like, whoa.
You go, girl.
That's amazing. Something's working. And at the board level, which we're doing more and more of, because you can imagine with some of the different regulations that are coming into play, boards are waking up to the fact that they need to diversify. That was 100% women and women of color. So they were all women, and a percentage of those were women of color. So, yeah, something's working. But specifically, you know, what does that mean when it comes back to, I would call it building, yes, diverse networks, but also building authentic networks. Because that's the reason I tell that story. Whatever it is that you're going into a room to connect with someone around, the higher likelihood that that connection will be deep and real and longstanding is when it's true that there's something that you really have in common. So for me, coming into a room like this, I'm not kidding, it's just about heaven on earth, because these are the people who are going to lead companies going forward. You're going to change the face of things. So make sure you're putting yourself into rooms with people who believe the same things and are excited about the same things.
So once you have a large network, it can be anxiety producing to make sure that in a business where networking is everything, that you maintain contact and are in touch with all these people who will bring value to your career in the future. So what are just some best practices about the best way to maintain contact with people who are part of your authentic network, but you might know peripherally? How do you establish deeper connections and just stay in touch?
I would think of networking as circles, right? If you think of the bullseye at the center and all the concentric circles that go all the way out, because I think some people might be surprised, both in terms of my profession and even the fact that I'm an extrovert, that inner circle, I think for all of us, if we're being really honest, is actually relatively small. And so it's how to tailor and orient the different interactions you're having at different levels of that sort of concentric circle. And let's start with the outermost round of that. So that means people who, there's a vast majority of them, you may not see them all that often, but how do you keep some points of contact with them? And that's the wonderful parts of social media, right, in terms of what we choose to share with what audiences in what format. So whether that's something like LinkedIn or Facebook or Instagram, I'm gonna guess that just using those three examples, for every single one of those are different. There's some overlap for sure, but they're actually different groups of people that you're gonna share different types of things with, and that's actually just fine. Like, it might be surprising that in a profession that is largely predicated on you sort of have to be on LinkedIn, I actually use it relatively rarely. That's the honest to God truth. So that's because Outer Ring accepted probably the largest percentage of people in it. It's pretty vast in terms of whether it's all that valuable to me or not, coming into more and more concentric circles. And not all these interactions have to be in person, right? But I do think it comes back to pick a lane, be known for something. So if in my case it's women and people of color, the kinds of things I'm gonna post about, the kinds of people are gonna celebrate, which by the way, it's so easy to say, Jana, oh my God, you did something amazing, and to post that, it's authentic, it's real, and it's in a lane that is meaningful to me. And it, oh, by the way, has the benefit of making someone feel good. It can be also articles, events, like, trust me, we'll be posting about today because we think this is pretty awesome, but making sure that you're not going too far afield from what it is that you want to be known for.
So I'm not gonna get eye rolls from this room when I go LinkedIn request, everybody.
Bring it on.
How do you, once you establish the connection, like, how do you continue to show them, like, how interested you are in them, how engaged are you in them? Especially, I imagine, like, you're constantly sourcing candidates for what you do. Like, how do you keep them fresh and, you know, keep them thinking about you and the sorts of roles that you could potentially ping them for later on?
Yeah, it's a great question. So many of you will probably get calls from me and people on my team who are interested in you for other operating roles or over the course of time, boards of director roles. And those are great opportunities to at least make a connection. I know, trust me, that your days are busy, and sometimes a call from someone like us, especially if you're in a job you like, you're deeply committed and engaged, can be a quote-unquote sort of waste of time. But like any relationship, right, they're long-term relationships. You're planting the seed, and oftentimes you can be helpful in referring somebody else. So talk about a great way to pay it forward into your own network. One of the things we've found oftentimes with women on board, just as an example, is the same women get called all the time, and they're not going to be able to take on anymore. They're truly at max capacity. But they also become the people, if they're great humans, which many, many, many of them are, who will then refer you to others. I used to say that, you know, some of these more obvious ones were the feeder system for the ones who worked maybe for them, with them, that they knew in their own network. So try to pay it forward. It's a great way, I think, to build networks of people who want to be around you because you have great access to information and opportunities.
So you are a professional networker. You touched on earlier, you mentioned introverts. So how, you know, extroverts, I think networking can still be difficult, but it comes a little bit more natural. Like, what are some concrete steps and ways that if you are an introvert, you can put yourself forward? I think it also ties back to what we were talking about, how to be proactive about your career goals and be able to have that confidence to negotiate what you want. So what are some tips for the introverts among us that they can utilize?
And I'll say, I would argue that probably just about anyone, whether you place yourself in the category of all the way introvert to all the way extrovert and everyone in between, going into a room of people that you don't know is actually different degrees of uncomfortable, but it's uncomfortable for everyone along that spectrum. So how, if you are tending to be even more introverted, how do you deal with that? So one of the things I try to do if I'm coming into a room like this is to look at the list of attendees in advance and have a little bit of a sense, and we had the chance in this case to do that, but mostly all women, women of color, a lot of women who come from product and engineering backgrounds, looking at the list of companies, to some degree, even if I knew no one in this room, it makes it a little bit more comfortable because I understand that there's something we could actually talk about that we might have in common. A lot of people in high growth tech, for example, you know, list goes on. If I actually know some people, I'll reach out to them in advance. There's a few people in this room that I did that in advance to say, I see they're gonna be there tomorrow. I'd love to grab 5 minutes with you. And by the way, that may or may not happen, but it actually increases my level of comfort going in the room if there's even two or three people that I know I've reached out to, and we're at least try to grab 2 minutes, you know, in between the hallway chatter. The other thing I would say, which is a different thing altogether, so there's going to events that other people organize, and then there's potentially hosting one of your own. And to the extent to which you are more introverted, less comfortable, the more control over it, I think the more comfortable you become. So if you were to literally say, I'm gonna grab 8 great women for breakfast 2 months from now, I'm gonna pick a topic that hopefully will be of interest to them, I'm gonna find one person that might actually even be a hook, right? They would be really interested to talk to Meredith because she's an expert in marketing and communications, and I'm curating that, right? Something like that, as maybe small and simple as it seems, is so much more comfortable because you're creating the topic and the people you wanna surround yourself with.
So you talked about some of the ways to think about using social media, LinkedIn, et cetera. What are some of the bad things that people do that are kind of your like networking watch out for and don't do?
I guess I'll just say, and this may sound horrible, but I feel like LinkedIn exclusively, again, it is an and situation, but LinkedIn exclusively is a little bit lazy. So I'm just gonna be honest with that. Again, use it. No one is saying do not use it. But what do I mean when I say LinkedIn alone is lazy? So I have an embarrassing number of people on LinkedIn, and I would say, unfortunately, because I made those choices, a lot of the people I don't know that well. And so whenever there's an outreach on LinkedIn, and I 100% of the time, by the way, just to be clear, will always respond. So it's not as if I'm not going to respond. I either say, respond to me, here's my email, or here's someone on my team, or here's someone else to refer you to.
100% of the time you respond?
But it's not always going to be to respond to say, I personally will talk to you, right?
Yeah.
Just to be clear. But I do believe wholeheartedly that when people ask you for something, you owe them at least a response. It can be literally as simple as, please email blah, and it's somebody else, and it is not me, right? Like,
okay, so I already failed.
But here's the thing. This might be shocking. This is where I'm talking about LinkedIn being lazy. There's a large percentage of the time today, especially, where I do respond and say, here's my email. I would like to talk to you. You might be shocked. The number of people who don't even take that step. It's a little bit of a laziness thing. It's like I just want to be like in your orbit. Like I don't really want to spend the time and talk to you. And those people are going to fall by the wayside because we are all going to be asking each other for favors. We all are. It goes back and forth. It is not just a one-way street. And so when that street like dead ends, when you've asked me for something, I've said I'll give you the time and energy, but you don't actually invest. So don't bother in the first part. Like literally the message to that is coming back to that full circle of making sure it's authentic, it's real, and you want to make that connection. But yeah, you'll hear responses from me.
All right, so switching gears a little bit to kind of tie back into some of the things we heard earlier from Maggie and Henry. Let's talk a little bit about comp and once you have the job you want, how to think about that. So what have you seen in your line of work as the most effective techniques that we can use to start to ask for a promotion and get that job that we want?
I think the most common mistake we all make when it comes to this topic is we're basically negotiating, let's be honest, when we're halfway out the door already. And the chances that that's gonna go well or that it'll even stay. So let's just pretend I'm halfway out the door, I negotiate, I get what I want. The studies show that literally a year from now you'll be gone anyway because the mentality, the connection, the commitment, the engagement is already so low. So the most important thing I can say to people when it comes to negotiation and compensation and salaries and all that is the most powerful it's ever gonna be is when you're actually happy, you're engaged in your job, and you're doing some of your best work and you're really proud of it. I will just say that is when it is so compelling because you're going to somebody to say, and I actually encourage people to say this, Meredith, I wanna have a conversation with you, but I wanna be here. Like I wanna start with saying, I love Twitter, I wanna be here, I'm committed to staying here. And I hope that you've seen, Meredith, that in the past 6 months, here's the things I've done. But I've also done my homework. This comes back to some of what Maggie was talking about, right? I've done my homework, and I understand sort of what both market rate is externally, even to some degree internally, and I'd love to talk to you about fairness and equity and, you know, what would it take for me in order to feel like I'm being paid what I'm worth, so to speak, right? And sometimes they'll tell you, by the way, there's a moment here of valuable feedback, which will be, hey, Jess, you know what? There's some things you could be doing better. And I know that you felt great about X, Y, and Z, and those are great. But as it relates to the job and what we're expecting of you, there's a few areas here where you're missing out. But if you get to that, great, what can I expect? So if I'm going to have another conversation with you 3 months from now, 6 months from now, what can I expect? And setting up the expectations accordingly. Because we're often in the position of trying to recruit you out of jobs, right? And when you go back to your boss at that point in time, your manager, it's gonna, oftentimes it's gonna come with an edge as opposed to, I wanna be here, I love what I'm doing, but I need to be paid fairly for it.
So from your unique position, what do you see that men do that women don't?
Yeah, a lot is the quick answer. And let's just start briefly for a moment with the conversation. Someone asked a question about whether given the laws in California, we can ask people what their current compensation is or not, right? And whether or not, and Maggie and I actually might disagree on this front, whether it actually advantages women or not. So again, I think we all know the concept being, I'm not going to be based on, oh, they made $150,000 and therefore offer them something based on that, right? I don't have that information coming into that. And it's all about the job is worth $150,000. This new job is worth it. So that's all great and good. But I will just tell you, in the months since this law has been in effect,
how long has it been in effect for?
It's not
recently.
Long.
Are you guys familiar with this? Okay.
January. Yeah. So it's very, very recent. So it's a small data set. But the number of times that men come into that conversation and still say, let me be really clear with you. This is what I'm making right now. This is what I'm expecting. And they come in often armed with their data. Versus more often than not, the woman's response is, you can't ask me that. I'm not going to tell you what I'm making. And you just tell me what the job is worth. Now, the woman, just to be clear, is legally well within her rights to do that. But if part of my job, and I'm a middleman, just to be fair, but part of my job is to try to get Jana more money or to get Jess more money, but I've also got to do it within the construct of what the company will or will not pay. So I've got boundaries on each side. But the piece that's missing to me, and actually Maggie and I have talked about doing this, is some negotiation training for women. Because that's not a level playing field if the guy still walks into that, chooses to share data, chooses to share expectation, and the woman in essence gives you nothing to go on. And so you're like, well, it's all right. I don't know what they're making, but I don't know what their expectations are. I don't know what kind of data they're coming into this with. So if true equity were to be in place, it would be that both come into that with equal skills as to how to negotiate.
So we have a couple minutes left. So I've got one more question, and then I want to open it up. Quick fire round. Top three qualities of a great networker.
They pick a lane, they have honest, sincere connections, and they follow up when they say they're going to.
Great. Top three qualities of a great interviewee.
They answer the question and stop and leave air. That was probably two or three. But there's one other thing I would just say. They back up what they have to say with examples. And they know how to tell a bit of a story around it. So it's not just the number is X percent, but like how I got there.
A lot of us in the room are managers, so what are the top three qualities of a great interviewer?
So if you're a great interviewer, one of the most important things you can do is make someone really comfortable. The more that they will truly open up and talk to you, so it's more conversational. People have often asked me, what's your favorite interview question? And I honestly think that in and of itself is the wrong question. There is no magical interview question that gets to the answers of the universe. What really happens is you invest in them, you really listen to them, and you create an environment which is actually warm and comfortable, because quite frankly, they'll walk into that sometimes and give you information that isn't information that you want to hire them, right? But that's the only way you're gonna see it, is if you create an environment where they speak up.
Questions?
on the table for women when they come to you? They don't tell you on time what your salary was? And I'm just curious because it has played out, obviously, negatively for a lot of women to do that. And how do you view yourself as that? Do you think, like, in the wider universe of people who have your vision for you, that it would play out the same way?
It's coming, for anyone who didn't hear the question, so it's coming back to this concept of if you're in a conversation where you're not going to share what your current compensation is, does that disadvantage women versus men? And there's two parts to that comment, at least I was trying to make. One is, do you or do you not share your compensation? I think that's slightly less of the issue than it is sharing your expectation for compensation. So thank you. I think I probably didn't do as good a job of clarifying. I mean, to be fair, there's two data points, right? One of which is the man and the woman both share with you what they're making, but they also share with you their expectation and why. And what I'm saying is during this new law that has come into effect, the man still basically does it the way he's always done it. So here's what I make, here's what I think I should make, and here's why. The woman, more often than not, with these new laws, says, well, I'm not going to share with you my current comp, which, by the way, is her right and his right, and probably in a lot of cases they shouldn't. But it's coming in educated and informed and being able to say to me, but here's what I would hope that this job would compensate me at and why.
Can I ask another question?
Yeah, of course.
I found when I was, like, I used to have another job, and I found that women, even when they asked, they didn't really know, so they would come and say something. So how can we, where should they go?
This is such a great point, because you're absolutely right. So men share this
information. Yeah, will you repeat the question?
The
just in case.
Oh, sorry.
Do you want
to
repeat it?
So
yeah.
The question basically, and correct me if I don't recreate it well, but the general idea was men have access to more information about compensation and expectations. But is that a paraphrasing? This could not be more true, full stop. So how do we get women smarter about, you know, what your worth is, right? Pay equity, what you're worth. So there's some obvious things. You can go on Glassdoor, right? Like, that's a sort of obvious one, which, by the way, as with any data set on the earth, is going to be flawed. Like, we had a team recently who came to us sharing Glassdoor data. We're like, yeah, but those were people who have literally 5 years less work experience than you do. And so there's lots of different ways to slice and dice the data. I would say this, though, and this is where it's uncomfortable for women, but is talking to not just your female counterparts, but your male counterparts about compensation. So I'll give an example. A business school classmate of mine, a guy, back when I was in my big firm land, was in a very, very similar job to me. And every year at around bonus time, his incentives, so by the way, thank you to all the amazing guys out here who do this. He said, I want to share with you what I'm making because I want to make sure, I was at a different firm, but in a very similar role, that you're making the same amount I am. And I most often was not, but I'd go back in and I'd have those conversations armed with data. Now, if he hadn't volunteered that, I think women find it uncomfortable to make the ask. But identifying other people, whether they're in your friend group, they're in other companies, and saying, look, I'm willing to return the favor. So I'm not asking you for something I wouldn't return. But if our jobs are similar, wouldn't it be helpful if we actually shared information back and forth with one another? The other just quick thing I'll say is, also use recruiters. Like, we have data all day long about what other people make, and we won't tell you the person's name or the company, but we'll say similar size and stage company in the same geography. Like, use us for that as well. We're a good compensation resource.
So I'm hoping, Jana, you can stick around afterwards to answer questions because I want to make sure we're on time. So thank you so much. Yeah, thank you for being with us today.
If you want to find out more about Jana Rich's work, you can find her at richtalentgroup.com or on Twitter at Jana Rich, JanaRich. Thanks again for listening to this week's episode. If you enjoyed it, please go to iTunes or wherever you are listening right now to rate and review it. You can also find us at tbtpodcast.com. Tomorrow Built Today is produced by Lightspeed Venture Partners. The theme music you heard today is by Mikhail Manveyan.